Thank you. Hare Krishna, సప్తకాంచన గౌరాంగి రాధే బృందావనేశ్వరి వృషభానుసుదే దేవి ప్రణమామి హరే ప్రియే వాంఛకల్పతరుభ్యశ్చ కృపాసింధుభ్యైవ చ పతితానాం పావనేభ్యో వైష్ణవేభ్యో నమో నమః. శ్రీకృష్ణ చైతన్య ప్రభో నిత్యానంద శ్రీ అద్వైత గదాధార శ్రీవాసాది గౌర భక్త వృంద హరే కృష్ణ 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 హరే హరే, హరే రామ 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 హరే హరే, హరే కృష్ణ 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 హరే హరే, హరే రామ 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 హరే హరే, హరే కృష్ణ 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 హరే హరే, హరే రామ 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 హరే హరే. ఓం పార్థాయ ప్రతిబోధితాం భగవదా నారాయణేన స్వయం వ్యాసేన గ్రదిదాం పురాణ మునినా మధ్యే మహాభారతం అద్వైతామృత వర్షిణీం భగవతీం అష్టాదశాధ్యాయినీం అంబత్వాం అనుసంధదామి భగవద్గీతే భవద్వేషిణీం. నమోస్తుతే వ్యాస విశాల బుద్ధే ఫుల్లారవిందాయుధ పద్మనేత్రం యేన త్వయా భారత తైల పూర్ణ ప్రజ్వాలితో జ్ఞానమయ ప్రదీపాం ప్రపన్న పారిజాతాయ తోత్రవేత్రైకపానయే జ్ఞానముద్రాయ కృష్ణాయ గీతామృతదుహే నమః. సర్వోపనిషదో గావో దుగ్ధా గోపాలనందన పార్థో వల్స సుధీర్భోక్త దుగ్ధం గీతామృతం మహల్. వసుదేవసుదం దేవం కంసచానూరమర్దనం దేవకీ పరమానందం కృష్ణం వందే జయద్గురుం. భీష్మద్రోణతట జయధ్రత జల గాంధార నీలోత్పల శల్యగ్రాహవతీ కృపేణ వహని కర్ణేన వేళాకుల. అశ్వత్థామా వికర్ణ ఘోరమగర దుర్యోధనావర్తిని సోత్తీర్ణం ఖలు పాండవైరణ నదీ కైవర్తక కేశవ. పారాశర్యవజ సరోజమలం గీతార్థగంధోల్కటం నానాఖ్యానగకేసరం హరికథా సంబోధనాభోదితం. లోకై సజ్జన షల్పదైరహరః ప్రేబీయమానం ముదా భూయా భారత పంకజ కలిమల ప్రధ్వంసిన శ్రేయసీ శ్రేయసే. మూగం కరోతి వాజాలం పంగం లంఘయతే గిరిం యల్కృపాతమహం వందే పరమానంద మాధవం. యబ్రహ్మ వరుణేంద్ర రుద్రమరుద స్వన్వంది దివ్యై స్తవైర్వేదై సంగపదై క్రమోపనిషదై గాయంతియం సమగాః. ధ్యానావస్థిత తద్గతేన మనస పశ్యంతియం యోగినో యస్యాందం న విదుసురాసురగణై దేవాయ తస్మై నమః. ఓం శ్రీకృష్ణాయ నమః. శ్రీమతి రాధికాయ నమః. సర్వత్ర గోవింద నామ సంకీర్తనం గోవింద గోవింద. Last Saturday, we have started discussing the fifth chapter of Bhagavad Gita, which is where Arjuna has asked Krishna this question, that out of karma sannyasam and karma yogam, which is better? This is how the chapter has begun. That previously Krishna has spoken in the earlier chapters in detail about karma yogam, which you have seen in the third chapter exclusively about karma yogam, and later on about karma sannyasam also. So naturally Arjuna had this serious doubt in his mind, that which one is better? Is karma sannyasam better or karma yogam better? What's the difference between karma sannyasam and karma yogam? Karma sannyasam means that one give up activities completely, completely give up karma and absorb in knowledge or in sankhyam or jnanam, whatever that is, process is followed. So absorbing in jnanam, is that better? Or absorbing in karmam, which is karma yogam, is better? This was the question what Arjuna has raised. Arjuna has a reason to ask this question because, as you know, Krishna has first spoken about knowledge in the beginning in the second chapter, later on about karmam in the third chapter, and in the fourth chapter, Krishna expressed in detail about the tradition of the great karma yogis, and how karma yoga survived in this world, beginning from the sun god Vivaswan, and so on and so forth. So when it comes to the fifth chapter, the first question Arjuna raised was, sanyasam karmanam krishna, if sanyasam is better, sanyasam of karma, sanyasam means to give up something, that's called sanyasam. So karma sanyasam means to give up karma. Is that better? Or karma yogam na shamsasi, or yogam, karma yogam is better. Karma yoga means to engage in Krishna service without expecting anything in return from Krishna. That is offering your services to Krishna wholeheartedly. That is karma yoga. So, which one is better? This is what Arjuna has asked that question to Krishna. These are very important topics in the Bhagavad Gita. As you know, that the whole Bhagavad Gita begins with this discussion on karma. And if you look very carefully, you will find that the second chapter, the third chapter, the fourth chapter, and even the fifth chapter is discussion about karma. So many chapters. In the second chapter, there is very little reference to karma. Mostly it is concerned about sankhya, analytical knowledge of the body and the soul. But as soon as you come to the third, fourth and fifth chapter, it is completely discussion about karma. Importance of karma and karma yoga. That's what is covered in these three chapters. So you can see, from the very beginning, Krishna has given a lot of importance to karma. And every yoga process is in this world. Karma yogam, jnana yogam, or bhakti yogam, all these processes, it has its own place in this world. You will find both in the Bhagavad Gita as well as in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Ultimately, Krishna brings everything and tie it to bhakti yogam. Tie that down to bhakti yogam. That is how it happens. So, this problem has happened to Arjuna as well as to Uddhava. Both of them asked the same question, in more or less the same way. Their questions were this, that sometimes you are saying that karma is important, sometimes you are saying jnanam is important, but almost all the time you said bhakti is important. So which one is important then? That question came up in both Arjuna's mind as well as in Uddhava's mind also. So when this question, when this doubt comes, came up like this, Krishna explained that it is based only in the Shastram, everything is what is known as Adhyari Vedam. Adhyari Vedam means that according to your qualification, you should take to it, that process. Normally speaking, most of us who are just beginning our spiritual life, we have to start with Karma Yoga. Karma Yoga is the beginning of that. You will see, Prabhupada explains that at the end of the sixth chapter, that you go in progression from karma yogam, you come to jnana yogam. That means if you execute karma with detachment, not expectation of any results from the karma, offering all your results to Krishna. In other words, kartratvam and bhoktratvam. That means I am the doer and I am the enjoyer or benefactor of the results. If these two ideas are given up in one's consciousness and one acts freely from that, and offer your results to Krishna, then that becomes karma yoga. So by performing karma yoga, one gets purified. The purification comes to an individual. And when one is purified, he will understand the knowledge side of Krishna consciousness or the transcendental knowledge. That is the way to reach the process of knowledge. And when one comes to jnana yoga, at that point, then slowly he realizes the importance of becoming conscious of the spiritual knowledge or jnana margam, and then he starts into the process of meditation, which is the Ashtanga Yoga system. So karma margam, you move on to jnana margam. From jnana margam, you come to the Ashtanga Yoga margam, which is the meditation process of jnana yogam, and eventually everything comes up and finishes in bhakti yogam. So this is how that process works. And exactly in the same way, you will also find in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna has discussed Karma Yoga up to the end of 5th chapter. And from 6th chapter onwards, it's all about Ashtanga Yoga system, or then Dhyana Yoga, 6, 7, 8, like that it goes. And then in 2 chapters, 10 and 11, Krishna and 12, Krishna discusses about Bhakti Yoga. And from 13 to 18, it's all Jnana Yoga. So different yoga systems are all discussed in the Bhagavad Gita with the intention that one has to take to all these processes at some time or the other. In human life, maybe we have a maximum life of about 60 or 70 years normally. Out of that, first 10 or 15 years is spent in playing and enjoying this world, and later on in Grihastha Ashram also. And in the old age, when everything is coming to a close, then we have very little time to practice Krishna consciousness. So therefore, Krishna explains there that if one takes to the process of Bhagavad Gita, when one tries to understand Bhagavad Gita, you should realize there that we have very little time in our control to engage in spiritual activities. Most of our time is busy in filling the belly and also earning a living in this world, and so many things are happening. So Krishna says there that this Karma Yoga process, at least one should engage for some time in life in order to purify oneself. And that is the process that is discussed in the Bhagavad Gita. So if you read in the 6th chapter, Prabhupada explains that at the end of 6th chapter, very end, if you see the last paragraph of the verse 47, which is the chapter 6, you will see there, Krishna Prabhupada explains like this: the culmination of all kinds of yoga practices lies in Bhakti Yoga. All other yogas are but means to come to the point of Bhakti in Bhakti Yoga. Yoga actually means Bhakti Yoga. All other yogas are progressions toward the destination of Bhakti Yoga. From the beginning of Karma Yoga, to the end of Bhakti Yoga is a long way to self-realization. Karma Yoga without fruitive results is the beginning of this path. When Karma Yoga increases in knowledge and renunciation, the stage is called Jnana Yoga. When Jnana Yoga increases in meditation on the Super Soul by different physical processes and the mind is on Him, it is called Ashtanga Yoga. And when one surpasses the Ashtanga Yoga and comes to the point of the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna, it is called Bhakti Yoga, the culmination. Factually, Bhakti Yoga is the ultimate goal. But to analyze Bhakti Yoga minutely, one has to understand these other yogas. This is important because when we do not understand the other yoga processes like Karmam, Jnanam, Ashtanga Yogam and all that, normally people tend to think that I am practicing Bhakti Yoga. And in that conception he thinks that I have nothing to do with any other yoga system. What they do not know is these other yoga systems are only to help you to get to the Bhakti Yoga process. Normally people think that Bhakti Yoga means what I am practicing now. I am not nothing to do with any other yoga system. To enter into Bhakti Yoga straight away is also a little difficult because of our three modes of material nature that is controlling us very, very strongly. So therefore, it is said here that factually Bhakti Yoga is the ultimate goal, but to analyze Bhakti Yoga minutely, one has to understand these other yogas. The yogi who is progressive is therefore on the true path of eternal good fortune. One who sticks to a particular point and does not make further progress is called by that particular name. That means depending on this stage you are, whether you are in the karma stage or in the jnana stage or in the dhyana stage, whatever it is, karma yogi, jnana yogi, dhyana yogi, raja yogi, hari yogi, etc. If one is fortunate enough to come to the point of Bhakti Yoga, it is to be understood that he has surpassed all the other yogas. Therefore, to become Krishna conscious is the highest stage of yoga. Just as when we speak of Himalaya, we refer to the world's highest mountains, of which the highest peak, Mount Everest, is considered to be the culmination. So, strictly speaking, Krishna has spoken about all the yoga system with an understanding that one has a feel for, one also practices the other yoga system in that progress eventually before coming to the Bhakti Yoga process. Otherwise, what will happen is when one wants to take the process of Bhakti Yoga directly and without rejecting everything else, the chances are that because of the lack of understanding, So many mistakes can happen. And to get fixed up in Bhakti Yogam is very difficult when one has not purified through Karma Yogam and Jnana Yogam. So these are stepping stones to come to Bhakti Yogam. So we'll continue from verse 5 in the chapter 5. That's where we stopped last Saturday. Yal sanghai prapyade sthanam tadyogai abhigamyade ekam sanghyam cha yogam cha yapashyadi sapashyadi. Krishna says there that yal sanghai prapyade sthanam, we discussed this, karma sanyasam and karma yogam. Arjuna asked which one is better. Krishna is saying there, whatever you can achieve by karma sanyasam, you can achieve by karma yogam as well. That in the absence of Krishna consciousness or absence of knowledge, you can say all different doubts comes into the mind when you do not understand something properly. And when you have proper knowledge of karma sanyasam and karma yogam, you do not know anything else except Krishna consciousness. That's the only thing what you have. That actually to see that karma sanyasam and karma yogam is one and the same, that is the proper understanding, Krishna says. Why it is like that, that he'll discuss it later. Why karma sanyasam and karma yogam bring you to the same point? That only one who has the knowledge can recognize that point. Sanyasastu mahabaho dukkhamaptum ayogada yoga yukto manirbrahmam ajirena adhigacharim. One should not think that karma sanyasam is an easy thing. Karma sanyasam is not a very easy thing. In fact, even to practice karma yogam without mistakes is very, very difficult. We are seeing this practically in this world, how difficult it is to practice karma yogam without any mistakes in karma yogam itself. Because karma yoga means one has to act without attachment to results and without the understanding that I am not the doer and I am not the enjoyer. Even that is a difficult thing. Karma yoga means even difficult. What to talk about karma sanyasam? So, karma sanyasam is a very, very difficult thing to follow. But karma yogam, karmam everybody can do. Nobody has any problem. We are all doing karma, morning to night. That's all what we are doing, isn't it? Only karma we do. We don't do anything else. But it is very difficult for one to sit idle without doing anything. That also we know. Why? Krishna says that your modes of nature will impel you or compel you to act in one way or the other. So therefore, we are under the control of karma in this world. One very, very long time, if one engages in this karma yoga process, eventually he will get purified because his consciousness is purified. Then that the I am the doer, I am the benefit, I am the enjoyer, that conception will go away from one's mind and one will get purified. This is how that happens. That is why karma yoga is important. You will find that many of the activities, the intention is to purify oneself. And as long as one acts selfishly in this world, that is difficult for purification. And that is why it's necessary to offer some service to other living entities, to Krishna. So by engaging in other services, one gets purified oneself. That selfishness goes away from oneself and we get purified in our existence. And that is the first step in the yoga process. So, when by karma yoga, by practicing karma yoga, when the sufficient purification has happened inside, then he will come to realize that he has got to the same position where by practicing karma sanyasam one has come to. That is the important thing. Karma sanyasam means that you give up karma completely, totally you give up karma. And in the fire of knowledge, you are situated. That means you are transcendentally, your knowledge is shining very strongly. In other words, you don't feel a need. You have completely rejected karma. And you have taken to the process of knowledge. And in that way, you have given up all karma. And eventually you get fixed up in that position. That is known as karma sanyasam. So in other words, through the fire of knowledge, you reach a particular position in spiritual life. Karma yogam is that process by engaging in karma, but not being attached and not being the conception of being the doer and the enjoyer, one eventually comes out of karma. So using karma, one comes out of karma yoga. By engaging in karma yoga, one comes out of karma. And that is also bring you to the same position as karma sanyasam. That's what's mentioned here. And when one has come to that position, then he gives up all karma and is properly fixed up in Krishna consciousness. That is what is mentioned here. Srila Prabhupada mentions here in the Bhagavad Gita in that connection that in advice what Maharaj Rishabhadev, one of the incarnations of Krishna, he has spoken to his 100 children. And that time he explained about it in the Srimad Bhagavatam. You can find these references. Nunam pramatta kuru devi karma yadindriya prenayamapinodi na sadhu mange yadamalpaneyam asannavi kleshadamasadeha parabhavastavada bhoda jado yamanna jityasadamalpanatvam yaval kriya savadidam manovai karmalpagam yena sharira bhanda evam mana karma vasham prayukte avidhya alpanubadi yamane prayadana yavanmai vasudeve namuchyade deha yogena daval. If you see in the Srimad Bhagavatam, Maharaj Rishabhadev says to his children that when one does not understand the intricacies of karma, what does he do? Nunam pramatta kuru devi karma. He completely intoxicated. Pramatta. Pramatta means intoxicated. And with pride. And he vikarmam. He engages in vikarmam. Nunam pramatta kuru devi karmam. What for? Ir indriya prenayamapinodi. Simply to gratify one's own senses. So, in the materialistic society, this is the principle of operation. Vikarmam, sense gratification. Vikarmam, sense gratification. That is the way the society functions. Nunam pramatta kuru devi karma, ed indriya prenayam apinoni, na sadhu manye, idam atmano yam masannavi, kleshadam asadeha. That what we do not know, na sadhu manye, idam atmano yam, that devotees know that asannavi kleshadam asadeha, that it is this very karma that has created this body. It has generated this material body. And if we continue to engage in the same activities again and again, what is the possibility of escaping from this material body? This is what Rishabhadev says to his children. So such great personalities, Maharaj Rishabhadev and so many other great kings of those days, they had such a high level of understanding of the importance of spiritual life, and they have injected this into their own members of the family, to the children. And Guru Nasasyal, Sujano Nasasyal, Devan Nasasyal, Napadishya Sasyal, Namo Jayadya Samujayadya Murtyam. In the Bhagavatam you can see, one is not a spiritual master, one is not Guru Nasasyal, Sujano Nasasyal, one is not a relative. One is not a mother, one is not a father, nothing, unless and until one helps his own children to get himself released from the cycle of birth and death. It says in the fifth canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. So here you can see that unless and until one has inquisitiveness or seriousness, jinyasa, to inquire about the true nature of oneself. He is totally in ignorance. He has no knowledge. Simply by dressing up and wearing the best clothes and traveling in the best car, it's not going to make a person realize about the his spiritual identity. That's not going to happen. As long as one do not have the jitnyasa or inquisitiveness to know atmadatvam, about oneself, what am I, what ought to realize the self. Atmadatvam yaval kriyastavadinam manovai karmaatmagam. That as long as then you carry on executing karma, what will happen? Karmaatmagam yena sharira bandha. That will only simply bind him to this world, to another material body. So that is what Maharaj Rishabhadev says there. Yeah. So you can see that in the Srimad Bhagavatam, in so many instances it is spoken. But what is given importance in the Bhagavatam is that kind of karma which is called vikarmam, or karma which is not karma yogam, or purely karma materialistic activities. It is that kind of activities that binds a person, not karma yogam. So because Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita has given this wonderful presentation on the karma yoga side in order to make us understand that every living entity is compelled to act. he has got this propensity to act. So Krishna says that somehow or the other, if you make that karma as karma yogam, then that will bring elevate you in your spiritual life and come to the point of knowledge. So that is what Krishna says.
Yoga yukto vishuddhalma vijidalma jinendriya sarvabhudalma bhudalma kurvannabhi nalipyadeyam.
Then actually a karma yogi,
Krishna says here, yoga yukto vishuddhalma vijidalma jinendriya. Actually a karma yogi
who has got a complete control of his mind, his senses and the mind, everything. Such a karma yogi, whatever he does, nothing binds him in this world. That is the situation.
Chitta yoga yukta vishuddhalma vichidalma chidendriya sarvabhudalma bhudalma.
For them, there is no need to execute karma sannyasam separately. Because in order to escape from karma, that is the purpose for which you have given up karma and fixed up in spiritual knowledge, isn't it? Jnanis, that's what they do. They give up karma completely and study very seriously and get fixed up in the spiritual knowledge. The purpose of doing that is that to get out of this karma. But karma yogi does not go that route. He doesn't take that route. What he does is, he engages in all his karma, he is transformed into karma yoga. By engaging in karma yoga, he does not get bound by that. Karma means otherwise very, very much binding. Normally among the jnanis, they will say like this, that as long as one is engaged in karma, his jnanam will not develop. That karma refers to materialistic activities, not karma yoga. So the higher the materialistic activities, the higher the karma is, jnanam will go down. When the jnanam goes up, karma will come down. So it's in that there is a relationship between karma and jnanam. And that karma that is referred to is the materialistic karma, not karma yoga. That is what Krishna is saying there. That karma yoga, if executed properly, he will make the progress and come to the platform of karma sannyasam or the jnani's position. And at that time, there will be no controversy at all.
Naiva ginjil karomidi yukto manyeda tatuvil pashyan shrinvan sprishan jigran asnan gachan sopan shosan.
So different activities, a person in Krishna consciousness, when he is completely absorbed in Krishna's service, and in that situation he is like a yogi, he is properly situated, because his absorption in Krishna is so strong that what he sees, what he hears, what he touches, what he eats, when he sleeps, when he breathes, whatever he does, nothing affects him personally, because it's all done in service of Krishna. That when one releases oneself from the bodily conditions, that means the bodily needs are eating, sleeping, mating, defending, all these things, these are bodily requirements. When one frees oneself from these bodily needs and is completely in service of Krishna, if it is executed, then it is only a mechanical process that goes on with the body. Why? Because the consciousness is already separated from the body. Consciousness does not have any more bodily identification. Everything is done in service of Krishna. Then he is not a doer, he is not a performer, nor an enjoyer. He is only a witness. That is how it says there. That spashyan shrinvan sprishan jigran asnan gachan sovan shosan, that whatever he does in that Krishna conscious condition, it is purely karma yogam and it does not have any bondage from that. Although in the eyes of the world, one may think that he is engaged in all kinds of activities, strictly speaking, nothing binds him. He is freed from everything. That's what Krishna says.
Pralaban visrajan grahnan unmishan nimishan navi indriyan indriyarteshu vartandamiti dharayan.
But one who does not have any understanding of this principle of Krishna consciousness, what happens is his situation is different. Not only that, whatever he does, he will claim that I am the doer. I've done this, I've done that, I'll go this, I'll do that. But even things what he has not done, he will take the ownership, proprietorship for that. You can see that in this world sometimes, that people act in that way, that even things which they do not have, they have not involved in at all, still they like to take the credit for that. So Krishna is saying here, because he is so used to taking pride in what he is doing,
And because he is so convinced that he is the doer, because he is so convinced that he is the enjoyer and benefactor of the results from all his activities, he wants to take the ownership of everything. And that will never leave him. That karma and the results will never leave him. And he will bind him stronger and stronger. Therefore, he will accept sometimes something and sometimes reject it. And sometimes he is happy and sometimes he is distressed because of this kind of dealings with the world. When one deals with this external world in that way, normally what will happen is that person will constantly experience the happiness and distress of the world. Sometimes he is extremely happy, sometimes extremely miserable. You will find sometimes people like that. Where does that come from? This is because of this complicated understanding of the karma. Pralaban misajan grahnan unmishan nimishan nabi indriyan indriyateshu vartandam idhikarayan brahmanyadhaya karmani sangam tektwa karodiyalipide masababena balpavatram ivambhasau. Then Krishna is giving an example there. What should be the consciousness of a person who is executing karma yoga? Karma yoga, when one executes, Krishna says there, although the lotus leaf has come from water, isn't it? Lotus leaf comes from water. In the lake you find that. But it doesn't have any influence of water on the leaf. The leaf stays like that, unaffected by the water. Similarly, one whose consciousness is absorbed in Krishna, his position is also similar, Krishna says. That he may be executing various activities in pleasing Krishna. But because it is for pleasing Krishna, and with that understanding, he is executing his activities, he does not get affected by the modes of material nature. And because he, normally what happens, people are born in karma. People grow up in karma. People take the results from the karma and they leave the world with all the karmic results, what they have created in this world. But one who is absorbed in Krishna, it says here, that he will never get affected by the karma. And this vast ocean known as karma, in that he can continue working, but like the lotus leaf in the water, and completely untouched by the water. That is what Krishna says there. There is a story about this. Then there was a great king who was once known as a great karma yogi. So many times, if king means what? King means he has the maximum involvement in material life, isn't it? Because that is normally the position of all the big people, that who are absorbed in administration, who are absorbed in management and all that. That means their total absorption in this world, in karma, in the loss of karma. Modern world does not have much idea about karma, how karma affects them, karma binds them, how what bondage means, what is life after death, what is soul. All this conception doesn't exist in the modern world. The modern world, most of the people are absorbed in the thought that simply identifying with the body and thinking that satisfying the bodily needs as the goal of life. Bhagavad Gita completely rejects this point. Bhagavad Gita is saying there that unless you understand this one principle, that these powerful forces are in this world, thing called karma, and you are controlled by this loss of karma and the modes of nature. The karma, loss of karma is there, and the three modes of material nature is there. These two things is totally controlling you, which you are not aware of. You are thinking you are free to do what you want, but strictly speaking, it is not so. So, here, what happens is that everyone gets absorbed in the karma to such an extent, he does not know how to come out of it. And then he, at the end, he has to leave this world in a very distressful condition because of his gross sinful activities and identification with the body. Because when there was good time, youth, and a healthy body and mind, he has spent all his time in sense gratification. And at the old age, when he is total distress, when body does not allow you to do anything, it is then you are thinking about spiritual life, and that becomes a little difficult at that time. That is why it's mentioned like this, that all these, Krishna has given us this transcendental knowledge in the Bhagavad Gita in order to understand the importance or the significance of this human body. Because only in human body, all these things can be understood, and properly one can control one's life or adjust one's life to suit the transcendental knowledge. In other species, it's not possible. But if human species also engages in the similar activities, like the animal species, then Krishna says, you have lost a chance
a great chance what has been given to you.
Labdhvasu durlabhamidam bahusambhavande manushyam arthadam anityam abhihadhiraha.
That very, very rare thing, Krishna says, to get a human body. People do not even accept that. They say, how do you know that this is a very rare chance? What can you answer to this question?
Labdhvasu durlabhamidam bahusambhavande.
Krishna is saying to us, it's a very rare chance you get a human body. After 8.4 million different species, human species is one of them. And to get to this human body is a very rare opportunity. And Krishna says also, manushyam arthadam anityam abhihadhiraha. If one does not utilize that human form of life for the real purpose for which it's been given, then turnam padeyadeyad anumurtiyavil nishreyasaya.
One day this body will drop off, isn't it? One day when death comes, the body drops off. And when it drops off, nishreyasaya vishaya khalu sarvatasyal.
That you have utilized your body for sense gratification whole life. No austerity, no penances. Always eating whenever you can get, whatever you can get. And sleeping as and when you like. And engage in all kinds of sense gratification. In this way, one lives in this world, and that is known as, from the Shastric point of view, it's called as Prakritam. Prakritam means virtually like animals, not much different than that. So when one lives like that, without any control on oneself, in the mind or the senses or the intelligence, and completely absorbed in satisfying the bodily needs, just like the animals do, that Prakrita stage, it is very hard. Because from there to come out, if you practice that for a long period in life, then to come out of that becomes very, very difficult. That is why this Karma Yogam and this requirements is discussed in the beginning itself.
Turnam padeya deva nimurtiyavil nishreyasaya vishaya khalu sarvatasyal.
This vishayam, this sense gratification, Krishna is saying, you can get in a hog's body, in a dog's body, in a cat's body, in everybody. You don't have to worry so much about a human body to have the sense gratification. So why this is all spoken so strongly is that in the modern world, when we all claim ourselves to be very learned or very highly knowledgeable, learned in the science and technology, everything, where we have no even the basic knowledge of the instructions of the Vedic literature, there seems to be a great controversy going through the mind all the time. And we, because of our training and also due to our own upbringing, we sometimes think that simply satisfying and maintaining the body as the only goal of life. And that is why most of the distress is coming to us all the time. When one absorbs completely in maintaining the body and the bodily needs, the result will be, he will cause distress to the rest of the world. And in that process, that distress will come back to him, and then he feels very helpless about it. So here, in order to eliminate those who are advanced in understanding of the transmigration of the soul and the need to culture Krishna consciousness, Krishna has analyzed it in depth to make us understand, this is how you act, and this is how you learn, and this is how you practice, and this is how you become perfect at the end. That is karmam, jnanam, dhyanam, and eventually bhakti. So in these processes, Krishna is allowing us to understand how to purify our own existence in this world. That's what Krishna has done. So this king who practiced karma yoga, according to the people, he practiced karma yoga. And it is most difficult for a king to do that, because all his daily activities are in the association with the rest of the world, three modes of material nature, in other words. And that's what makes it more difficult. So once one person asked him, how do you do this, that you live like a karma yogi? As you say, you are like a karma yogi, you are able to perform this. So the answer to that, the king said, he handed over him a lamp. And without any cover. And he told him, you take this lamp and go around all my palace and then come back to me. He said, if you go around in my palace all over, you will find various arts and treasures kept at different places. You can see all that. But make sure that this wick doesn't go off, because it was burning from the oil. If you are not careful, the wind will come and close it down or push it off. So he said to him, the king told this person, that you take the wick in your hand and go around looking for the all the things what's in the palace. So he carried this wick in his hand and he went around all over the palace looking for everything what is kept in each nook and corner of the big palace. After about an hour or so, he came back to the king. And the king asked him, what did you see? He says to the king, I didn't see anything because I was busy with this wick. So you can see, this is what the king answers to him. This is how I am, he said. I am engaging in all these things with people, but always I am careful about my own spiritual life. That is how you have to be. That similarly, just like that person who went around with the wick in his hand, although he was instructed to use the wick to see everything, but because his mind was absorbed in the wick, in keeping the wick going, and because he knew that if the wick has gone away, then he is stuck, complete darkness everywhere. So because of that, he had the fear to take care of the wick first and not the treasures and the arts. They are not important. He wanted to see them, no doubt, but the king told him, you look after this wick very well, otherwise you may get into trouble because you are wandering around the palace. There were no electricity or anything those days. You had to carry these lamps. So he was carrying it like that, and the king told him that if you don't take care, the light may go off and then you will be in serious problem. So because of that fear, he took care of the wick all the time. Similarly, the king said, I'm always fearful about my spiritual life. And because I'm careful about my spiritual life, the rest of the things, whether it works well or not, it doesn't bother me so much. I keep doing it, but at the same time, I'll take care of my own spiritual activities. So that is the mood of a Karma Yogi also. Karma Yogi, one doesn't become a Karma Yogi straight away by offering the results also. That's also not enough. There are other requirements as well. For example, when one executes Karma Yoga, one has to have the understanding. First understanding is that you want to have the release from this world, from the cycle of birth and death, liberation. That should be in his foremost in his mind. Otherwise, you will not make it. So there are many people who just say, for charity's sake, you will give some money for some purpose and pull out from everything else. And they're not engaged in spiritual activities. They just hand over some results of their activities and stay away from that. That is not good enough. One has to also be focused on this one thing, that ultimate purpose of all these things is to free oneself from this cycle of birth and death. So that is one thing. Secondly, in order to get there, apart from offering one's results to Krishna, one also has to perform sadhana in one's own life. A certain amount of practice of spiritual life is also necessary. Otherwise it will not work. That one who has no practice of spiritual life, one who has no desire for liberation, simply one hands over a part of his results to Krishna, that is not Karma Yoga. That is not Karma Yoga. Karma Yoga means only when one is acting like a yogi in his karma. Karma is there, and Krishna says that karma can help you. You can get out of karma by Karma Yoga. But the process is, these two the prerequisites or two requirements are there, that he has to be completely absorbed in going back home back to Krishna. That desire should be strong in his mind to free himself, and he should study accordingly. He should study Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam thoroughly in order to get to the understanding that why it's necessary to cultivate Krishna consciousness. All these things should go simultaneously. So this is what that story is saying, like the lotus leaf in the water, that king has acted in that way. Kayena manasa buddhya kevale indriya iravi yogina karma gurvandi sangam tekto alma shuddhayem. That normal people, when they are executing kayena manasa buddhya kevalai indriyai ravi, body, mind, intelligence, senses, all these things people use to execute karma in this world. And when they execute karma, what happens? They get more and more impure. They get contaminated by that. And what is this contamination means? Contamination means that your mind is affected by the three modes of, lower modes of nature. That's what happens. Attachment, aversion, love, hate, desire, anger, all other kinds continuously affect the consciousness. And for ignorant people, karma will increase all these things. All these things will increase for ignorant people.
But for one who is executing Karma Yoga in Krishna consciousness, the result is the other way. That as long as he is executing activities in Krishna consciousness, what is happening is he is getting purified all the time. So you can see, for one person, karma is binding him. For another person, it's liberating him. Therefore, by the body, mind and senses, intelligence, everything, the great devotees or the devotees, they engage in so many different activities with the understanding that it is purifying them, it's not binding them anymore. Only thing is, they are able to execute these activities with total detachment of the results and fully fixed up in the spiritual position, their consciousness, and without any pride, they are able to do that. That the same karma, when it is carried on by the ignorant people, it brings them more attachment but also more bondage. Yukta karma valam tyaktva shanti vaapnoti naishtikim ayukta kamagarena phale sakto nibhadyate. That the yogi, karma yogi, by the activities of his karma and such results of that karma, he comes to peace at the end, fully fixed up in Krishna consciousness. There, whereas the other hand, the ignorant person, ayukta kamakarenam, therefore the ignorant person unnecessarily suffer from the all the karma what he has performed in this world, and he gets caught up in that and suffers due to that. Many different kinds of material desires and pride builds up in him and encourages him to work hard after that. That desire will build up after that. Because of this continuous flow of material desires inside and the pride also, these two things forces him to act very all the time in this way. And ultimately gets caught up in that web and suffers there. Whereas a yogi who is Krishna conscious, when he is executing Karma Yogam, the result is that it is only done for his own purification. That's where the difference is. The yogi, Karma Yogi, executes it for his own purification, whereas the ignorant person, he executes it for his sense gratification. This is the difference between the Karma Yogi and the Karmi, in other words. Sarva karmani manasa sanyasyasti sukham vashi navadvare pure dehi naiva kurvan nakarayan. That a yogi, by all his karma that he has given up in his mind, therefore whatever he is doing, it is done in Krishna's pleasure. Because it is in the service of Krishna, it does not have any effect on his mind anyway. He sits in his body, and at the same time, just like when one is at home, a guest is also present there. That everything is happening in the presence of the guest. But the guest has no ownership in anything what he does at the home, when he is in the house. He is a guest, so he has no ownership. So similarly, I am the ownership, and the results of all that is enjoyed by the householder who has invited the guest. Therefore, but Krishna says here that one should live like a guest in one's own body and engages that. He is only a witness, and all his activity should be, is neither the doer nor the enjoyer. Therefore, whatever the body does, that none of those karma actually affects the karma yogi. Na kartrutvam na karmani logasya sajati prabhu na karma phala samyogam svabhavastu pravartate. That Krishna doesn't give karma. Karma comes from one's own nature, and karma phalam, the results also, or the benefits of those, or the results, are not given by Krishna. Nor Krishna makes us to accept that we are the doers. Krishna is not doing any of these things. Who does it? The jiva does it. The living entity himself does that. Krishna is not doing that. Krishna has left us to do what we want to do. And we utilize that, take that ownership on ourselves, that we are the doers. And we start thinking that I am the doer, I am the enjoyer. And then when the results come also, that the results of our own karma also happens in the same way. That everything Krishna says here, svabhavastu pravartate. Svabhavam is the thing that makes us to act in one particular way or the other. There are so many examples given what svabhava means. But often it's not very difficult to understand what svabhavam.
Swabhava means that one's own nature, an inherent nature in a person. There's an inherent nature in everyone. Someone whose Swabhavam is always addicted to sense gratification, he will look for sense gratification. We look for sense gratification. And sometimes someone else who has a different nature, a Krishna conscious nature, he'll look for Krishna consciousness. Wherever he goes, his mind will be absorbed in Krishna conscious activities or to develop spiritually. That desire will be there. So that is what is called a Swabhavam. Swabhavam is like that. One Swabhavam. That is that comes from the vasanas inside. The vasanas of a person or the propensities in herself. Sometimes, just to give you an example, if you carefully observe, sometimes people come to the temple. When they come here, they come and then they look around everywhere and they go to the temple room. When they go to the temple room, they think a lot of people are standing there chanting Hare Krishna and singing, dancing, whatever that's going on at the temple room. So when they see that, they start thinking, oh, what a noise they're making unnecessarily. And they start thinking like that. He says, at least I came to the temple to have some peace. That's what they say. When I came here to have some peace, what's going on? It's much more noisy than outside. So they make a complaint. In their own mind, they think like this, that there is so noisy it's inside. He says, let me find somewhere else to sit peacefully. So he wanders around, comes up, wanders here and there. And he looks into the Prabhupada's room, he says, oh, there is also something going on there. So looks around, there is also somebody is talking there. He says, so Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, whatever that is being spoken. He says, this is also not a place for me. There is no place in this temple anywhere I can sit peacefully. So he goes through the gate, goes out, let me go and sit in the pub, he says. Because he finds the peace there in the pub. Why? Svabhavastu pravartade. That svabhavam, you cannot take it out easily. Because that is his peaceful place where he finds all the peace in this world. When he gets there, he finds all his good friends there, whom he has met some time before, and they are all enjoying life. He says, this is life. Why have I come? I came to the wrong place, he says. First I went to the wrong place, now I got to the right place. So like this, svabhavastu pravartade, svabhavam is something that is built up over a period of time. So we have to change that svabhavam. This svabhavam will change by knowledge, nothing else. When one becomes conscious of one's own shortcomings or one's own inherent nature, and when one changes that, then he becomes Krishna conscious. And the very same person, when he comes to the temple room, after a while, after he has developed some taste for Krishna consciousness, the same person will join the singing and dancing later. So that is all it is. Svabhavam is only like that. Svabhavam is something what we have cultivated in our life over a long period of time. Just like in the third canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, when Kapila Vasudeva was discussing with Devahuti Devi, there is a beautiful presentation of this Svabhavam mentioned there. How the Svabhavam binds a person in different ways. That Cheta Khalvasya Bandhaya Muktaye Jalpanomadam Guneshu Saktam Bandhaya Yadimba Pumsi Muktaye Bhagavatam. What Krishna says, Kapila Vasudeva says is Cheta Khalvasya Bandhaya Muktaye Jalpanomadam. If you link your consciousness or mind to Krishna consciousness or with Krishna conscious activities, muktaye chalpanomadam, that will lead into liberation. If you allow your mind, guneshu sattam bandhayam, if you allow your mind to associate with the three modes of material nature, radam va pumsi muktaye, that then it will lead into bondage. That is also explained in the third canto. Just like when, say for example, a little boy or a little girl, 5 or 6 years old, up to that time, he is growing up at his house, and up to a certain age, he has not taken coffee, tea or anything like that. He has no taste for it. He hasn't had the opportunity to take coffee or tea. One day, he saw in the morning that his father was drinking coffee. The others were also drinking coffee. So he comes and stands there looking at them, with his mouth open, what they are doing, thinking like this. So the father feels compassion for him. Oh, he's not drinking coffee. Why? He's not drinking coffee. So tells the mother to bring some coffee and give it to him. So the mother brings some coffee and gives it to the child. He takes a little bit, a small sip. He doesn't like it. He gives it back. He says, I don't want it, he says. So the father is saying to the child, okay, if you don't like it, put some sugar into it, he says. So puts one or two teaspoons of sugar into it and then ask him to drink it again. He's training him up to come in the follow the same footsteps of the father. So father tells the child to take the cup of coffee and drink it. So he drinks it. When the sugar is gone and he finds a little taste for it, he drinks it. So first day he drinks, second day he drinks like that. So initially it's only one cup in the morning or one cup in the evening like that. But when he grew up, after about 10-15 years, say he's 20-22, he starts working, goes out into the office and start working somewhere. Then they start realizing that every hour coffee is served from the coffee machine or in the kitchen they are making coffee. So you also become a member of the coffee team, coffee club, whatever that is called. So later on, this carries on for a long time in life, say 40 years or so working life. He has been drinking coffee or tea, whatever it is, like this. So every day he consumes 4 or 5 cups of coffee. So after about 60 or 70 years old, if you ask that person, can you give up this coffee drinking? He says, no, it's not possible. And all you have to see, his universal form, if one fine morning the milk didn't arrive or there wasn't enough sugar, you will see his universal form that day, what he is going to do. He will get so upset and worried about it, not getting that coffee or tea. How did this happen? How this situation has happened in life? The situation has happened because originally, before he was 5 years old, before he started taking the first sip of the coffee, he did not associate with these coffee drinkers very much, isn't it? He was aloof from them. He had no interest in them. But when he started associating with them, the same habit started building up in him. And it came to a point at the end that he found it very difficult to give up that coffee drinking business. Coffee business, he has found it very, very hard. Now, if you calculate, take a calculator and calculate yourself, that if he drinks, say for example, 2 liters of coffee every day, if you calculate, you will see 6-7 cups some people drink, or 8 cups, I don't know, every hour they have a coffee, one account or the other. So like this, they have been drinking 2 liters every day, 365 days a year, 60 years in life, if they have done that. Can you imagine how much the coffee will be? It will be more or less the size of that lake there. That much coffee has gone inside. And now it has become so difficult to come out of that flood from the coffee. So this is how we become victimized by the senses. Now the senses, they have been continuously feeding the mind, and mind has got absorbed in that, that he needs the coffee. Cheda kallasya bandhaya muktaye chalpanovadam guneyeshu saktam bandhaya that this is the way that bondage happens to the mind and the senses with this external world. So unless one is externally careful about the things, how one controls one's mind and senses, one gets victimized by that and becomes very difficult to come out of it.
Kayena manasa buddhya kevale indriye iravi yogina karma kurvandi sangam tyaktva atma shuddhaye Yuktakarmavalam tektva shanti matno di naishayim ayukta kamadarena bhale sakto nivadyade sarvakarmani manasa sanyasyaste sukham vashi navadvare pure dehi naiva kruman nakarayan. That he does not engages himself in such a way that he is aloof from his senses and the mind. Na kartrutvam na karmani logasasajali prabhu na karma phala samyogam svabhavastu pravartate. It is only the svabhavam or one's own nature that is working.
one does not have any control all the time that he has the, one has to change one's swabhavam or this nature.
Nadate kase jalpavam na jaiva sukratam viho ajyanena avanam jnanam tena mukhyanti jandavaha.
Important point. Nadate kase jalpavam na jaiva sukratam viho. Sometimes people blame Krishna for everything what they have in their life. They say, I have been put into this distress because Krishna has given me this distress. Or when they acquire some material opulences, they say, Krishna has given it to me. Actually, Krishna is saying here, na adatya kasa jilpavam na jaiva sukratam vibhum. Krishna doesn't give pious results or sinful activities, sinful results, neither of them. That because his knowledge is covered by ignorance. That's what Krishna says. Ajnanena avratam jnanam tena mukhyanti jandavam. That as long as one's knowledge is covered by ignorance, that this will be his condition. That that when we have discussed this in the second chapter, when we talked about the soul, the importance of the soul, as long as one has completely forgotten his identification with the soul, what will happen? Immediately his bodily identification will begin. And when the bodily identification begins, ajnanena avadam jnanam, that ajnanam or ignorance will cover his knowledge also. Knowledge is all is only there when one is not identifying with the body. That is the important point. Ajnanena avadam jnanam. Jnanam, knowledge is there when one is not identifying with the body. Then he is identifying with the soul, and then he is properly situated. But the moment one identifies with the body, he is covered by ignorance. Ajnanena avratam jnanam tena mukhyanti jandavaham. That immediately he accepts that all the activities of the body and the senses as his own activities, and then he starts experiencing the happiness and distress of this world. That will put the living entity into distress. Jnanena tatad jnanam yesham nashinam atmana tesham aditya valjnanam prakashayati valparam. That when one is purified, when one's knowledge is shining within oneself, sattva sanjayate jnanam, Krishna says in another place in the Bhagavad Gita, that when the mode of goodness is very strong in a person, what will happen is knowledge will also shine forth very well. Sattva sanjayate jnanam. Jnanena tatad jnanam yesham nashinam atmana tesham aditya valjnanam prakashayati talparam. That how does it shine? Krishna says here, tesham aditya valjnanam, just like the sun is shining, prakashayati talparam, that knowledge will shine in a person in the same way. And only by that light, by illumination, then the darkness will go. So all the ignorance what is in us also has to go by knowledge, spiritual knowledge. That the self illuminating nature of the sun is also there for the soul. When the soul is removed, when the soul has all the ignorance has been removed from one's consciousness, the soul is self illuminating and the knowledge manifests in a person in an automatically. Just like that cloud. The cloud covers the sun, isn't it? When the cloud is covering, we are thinking that sun is covered by the cloud. Actually, it's not like that. Because our vision is covered by the cloud. The sun is not covered by the cloud. Because the small eyes what we have, it has its own limitations. And when the cloud comes in the sky, the sun is independent. Sun has lights everywhere. But our vision is limited by our senses. The eyes have got the capacity. The eyes are limited, and therefore we feel that the sun is covered by the cloud. Actually, sun is not covered by the cloud. Cloud cannot cover the sun. Sun is much more powerful than a cloud. But normally people will say like this, that the sun is covered by the cloud, therefore I can't see it. What it is that his eye, the sense, has got very limited capacity. It cannot go through the cloud and see the sun. Sun is already existing there. It is not covered by anything. So, tadbuddhaya tadalpanam tanishtantalparayana gacchandya punaravartim jnanamurdhudakalmashaha. That tadbuddhaya tadalpanam, that when one has practiced Krishna consciousness through knowledge and through renunciation and detachment, and if one develops Krishna consciousness that way, what will happen? Krishna says here, tadbuddhayam tadalpanam,
His intelligence is fixed in Krishna. Tadatmanam, he knows his relationship with Krishna. Tadatmanam tannisha, he has no other business in this world except to please Krishna. Talparayanaha, that continuously surrender to Krishna in all activities. Gachandi, then he goes away. What? Apunaravartim, no more rebirth after that. Jnananardhuda kalmashaha. Because the pure transcendental knowledge is shining from that personality. Where is the question of accepting another body again? This is what Krishna is saying there. Talbuddhaya tadalpanam tannishta talparayana gachandi apunaravartim jnananardhuda kalmashaha. Then when one is properly situated in spiritual position as spirit soul, and if all his activities are spiritual, there is no possibility of being covered by ignorance. There is no possibility of covered by ignorance. That is why in Krishna consciousness it is necessary to engage all the time in Krishna conscious activities. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says that even if one has come to this condition in this material world, because in the age of Kali, most of the people do not have that capacity to practice spiritual life. Their mind is disturbed. They have no strength of mind to engage in spiritual life, nor the desire. So even if like that, Mahaprabhu says there, if you simply chant the holy names of Krishna, that will protect you from the influence of Kali and all the other difficult situations. So therefore, it comes to the point that Tannishta Talparayana. What is this Tannishta mean? Tannishta means always chanting Hare Krishna. That is Tannishta. Talparayana. That always paying obeisances to Krishna, surrendering to Him. And if you practice it like that, many, many lifetimes of karma vasana or the propensities in different lifetimes, what we have attained and all the other desires and distresses will go away and he will get purified from that. And he does not have to come back to this material world again. Vidya vinaya sampanne brahmane gavihastini shuni chaiva shubhageja pandita samadarshinah. Very important words. Then Krishna says, Vidya vinaya sampanne, one who has perfection in knowledge, vinaya sampanna. Vinaya sampanna means one who is extremely full of humility and full of knowledge. Vidya vinaya sampanne. These two things are interrelated, vidya and vinayam, because vidya means knowledge and vinayam means humility. Krishna says, if one who is really knowledgeable, one who is properly understood the science of Krishna consciousness, he will be automatically humble. He has to be, because vidya vinaya sambhane, the result of vidya is vinayam. Vidya vinaya sambhane, and who is the best example? Brahmane gavihastini. Brahmana is the perfect example of vidya, of this nature. Gavihastini shuni jaiva shubha keja pandita samadarshinah. That Krishna is saying there that a vidya person who has reached that state of consciousness, when he sees other living entities in this world, namely a cow, an elephant, a dog, a dog eater, brahmana, a learned brahmana, when you see all these different personalities in this world or different living entities in this world, when we see, what do? If we see a dog, oh, he's just a dog, we'll say. And if somebody is a dog eater, we'll say, oh, he's just a dog eater. Or if he sees an elephant, we see it's an elephant, because we see the body in all these conditions. Our consciousness is not gone beyond that understanding. So, vidya avinaya sampanne brahmane gavi hastini, that when, what? Samadarshina, one who is learned, Krishna says, one who is pandita, or one who is samadarshina, he has got an equal vision. He knows that every living entity in this world is a part and parcel of Krishna. It is Krishna's part and parcel that is sitting in that body. And we are not able to understand that, even though we want to, but we are not able to see that. Because as soon as our true nature will come out, as long as we start dealing in this world, we immediately forget about all these instructions in the Bhagavad Gita. In the Ekadasha Skandam, in the Srimad Bhagavatam, this is a point which has been given a lot of importance. And only to bring you to that state of understanding, the Vibhuti Yogam is spoken, or the opulences of the Absolute, Bhagavad Gita as well as in the Srimad Bhagavatam. This is discussed for this reason, to bring us to that understanding. And there were great personalities who have practiced this in their life. Those who have studied Ekadasham and Bhagavad Gita very thoroughly, and those who have absorbed that into their own life, and they will see that later on, that is this what Krishna has spoken is all true. How do we see everywhere the same Krishna's presence in every living entity, which is a very difficult thing in our present conditioned state. But when one has practiced this through the through Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam, there were personalities who have proved that it is possible to come to that state of understanding. So nothing is wrong in the Bhagavad Gita. What's wrong is with ourselves. Vidyamane sampanne brahmane grihasthini shuni jaiva shobageja pandita sapadarshinaha. That ihaiva dairjita sargo yesham samye siddhamana nardosham hi samam brahma tasmal brahmani desidaha. Then such a personality who has come to that state of existence, consciousness, he has already won over that the dualities of this material world. He has crossed over that. Dualities of the material world means, we have discussed this before also, happiness and distress, heat and cold, happiness and distress, and things like that. Everything is two in this world, isn't it? Boy and girl, night and day, black and white, like that, endless it is. Everything, you can, duality. This whole world is nothing but duality exists in this world. And in this duality, when one is controlled by the dualities of this material world, we get affected by that. As long as it's a bit cold, we feel, complain about it. And as long as it gets hot, also we complain about it. So why is this happening? Because of the, that we are controlled by the dualities of the material world. So, but a personality who has seen, who has realized Krishna in every living entity, he is not affected by the dualities of the modes or dualities of the material nature. Duality is coming from the material nature. It doesn't come from Krishna. When one is properly fixed up in Krishna consciousness, then these dualities go away. He is absorbed in Krishna. For such a person, material existence does not have any impact. He is liberated while he is living in this world. Often people have this understanding that I will live in this world, and when I finish life in this world, I'll get liberated and go back to the spiritual world. That is how most of the people think about it. But strictly speaking, it's not like that. Liberation is not something that is waiting for after death to be handed over in a plate. It doesn't happen like that. People have this, often you will find people thinking that, I have to live this life, but because I've followed the spiritual activities in my life, that as soon as I die, it'll be handed over to me. That somebody is waiting there to pick me up, to take there, wherever that is. But Krishna is saying there that the liberation is such a thing that by practice alone, in this life, in this very human body, when practiced properly, it has to happen here. It's not that it is done immediately after death, straight away. That it will happen here very well in this body. Although he lives in this body, he is already liberated. That body is only waiting to drop off from its prarabdha karma. So that is how the understanding of this liberation, it comes in the Ekadasham much later. Krishna and Uddhava ask all these questions in detail about liberation. That's the point when it's discussed. Na prakrishyal priyam prapyam, odyujal prapyaja priyam, sthira buddhi rasam modo, brahma vil brahmani sthidaha. That when one is Krishna conscious completely, such a great soul, he is not unhappy or happy when happiness or distress comes. Then not only that, he cannot have all these kind of dualities and happiness and distress in him. Just like a sea which is totally peaceful when there is no waves in the sea, in a similar way his consciousness is also very peaceful. That you can recognize such a person very easily. Then bahya sparshe sasaktalma vindatyalpani yat sugam sa brahma yoga yuktalma sugamakshayam asnudem. Then by a proper lifestyle based on Krishna consciousness, that him, he will realize his, he will come to realize his relationship with Krishna. That Krishna consciousness is like this, that all other sense enjoyment stops. Sense enjoyment means shabdam, touch, sound, smell, form, taste, all these kinds of things, relationship with the body comes to an end. Not only that, all his happiness is coming from inside, from the soul. That it is unconditional. It is not controlled by the external world. Our happiness is very much controlled by the external world, isn't it? Sometimes, when things happen the way we want that to happen, we think, oh, everything is going very well, we are happy. The very next day, everything goes wrong, then we are totally unhappy about everything what's happening in life. This is our nature. But a person who is advanced in spiritual life, Krishna is saying here, that because this happiness is coming from the soul, not from the material nature, he is always peaceful, he is not disturbed by that. This is why it is expressed here, Krishna is repeatedly saying that how important it is to get these things under control. That that yehi samsparshaya bhoga dukhayonayamevade adyandavandagaundeya nadiyeshudamade bhudam. That whatever yehi samsparshaya bhoga dukhayonayamevade, that even though sometimes you feel happy in this world, that happiness, Krishna says, is coming from because of the contact with the sense objects. That's what is giving you the happiness. For example, say if you are tasting some nice food, although you may say, I am taking Krishna prasadam and all that, strictly speaking, you are satisfying your senses very nicely. And but Krishna consciousness gives you a nice coverage for that. So often we will make it as an excuse, oh Prabhu, I am taking prasadam, so I must be properly situated now. And a few kilos of prasadam goes inside. And then if you are properly situated, Krishna says no. Because even if it's prasadam, large quantities is not going to liberate you. Because Krishna has also mentioned in the Bhagavad Gita that one has to learn to control one's own eating habits. It's necessary, because otherwise what will happen is that in due course, that senses, out of all the senses, we have how many senses? 5 senses of knowledge and 5 senses of action. Now, out of this, there is one leader. And who is that leader? The leader is the tongue. Why? Because all other senses has got only one activity. But this thing called tongue, he has got two jobs. He has got 2 hats to wear. Sometimes he is speaking all the time, talking nonsense all the time. Or sometimes he is eating and tasting the food also. So because of this, what we say is, although there is no bones in that, he is the strongest one. The tongue has no bones, but still he is the strongest of all the senses. So one has to be extremely careful of this person inside. He is the one who causes all the problems also in this life. If he is under control, even in the material world, life is a lot easier. But when he is not under control, always there is danger, every step. So, therefore, in the Srimad Bhagavatam, while talking about this tongue, is the finest example given is the fish. How the fish, it takes to the bait. When the fisherman, he goes and sits there with his tackle in the hand, and it has got one small worm or whatever it is at the very end of it, and he's holding and sits there hours together like this. And suddenly the fish is seeing this small piece of flesh there hanging, comes and bites that. When he bites that, immediate experience is that he's hooked there. But although he is hooked, he's still enjoying that meat, what has come into the mouth. He does not know what the danger is waiting next second for him. He pulls out and he falls into his net there, isn't it? But although that happens, still he'll go and bite it again and again. Why? So Atre Maharshi asked this question to one fish, and the fish answered like this: my dear sage, you don't know how much I was enjoying that piece. So sage asked him, don't you realize that you're going to lose your life? So what? He says, but I have enjoyed my life. I had that opportunity to taste that worm, whatever that was given on the bait. That was I had for a second only, not for a long time. But that happiness, where can you get it? He says. Atreya Rishi says, I have learned my lesson. I've learned my lesson. What I have to learn, I have learned. In the 24 spiritual masters in the Bhagavatam, you will find Atreya Maharshi walking away from there. I have found another spiritual master, that is this fish. I learned that I should not get victimized like that in this world. So you can see how careful you have to be to guard yourself in spiritual life, not to get vindicated by all the different situations in this world.
Then
all sense gratification in this world is cause of distress, from beginning to end, in the past, the present, in the future, which we know. We know that very well, isn't it? People who have gratified their senses, generally you will see that when they are in distress also, due to illnesses or so many things in this life, at the old age, different kinds of distress comes and hits us. But often, those who have engaged their senses in sense gratification for very, very long time, you will find that this sense gratification alone comes back in different distress forms, in the forms of different distresses to him. But therefore, an intelligent person controls his senses all the time, Krishna says. That is his consciousness. And because he is like that, he stays away from sense gratification. Does that mean that he is not situated happily? No, because he is deriving his happiness from the soul. And we do not get to this position. And therefore, it all looks very strange to us. Does it exist something like this? We think. Because we only know one thing, how to become happy by through the senses. We have not learned anything else. That is the main difficulty. From all these things, we can understand one thing, that there are two kinds of happiness. One, that happiness that comes from within, and another happiness that comes from outside. That we discussed this before, in the second chapter, then Jagrat, Swapnam, Sushupti, three states of existence we have, isn't it? The wakened state, the dream state, and the deep sleep. That is the three states of existence. So, in the Jagrat state, when we are experiencing the different senses, senses are not active in, that's the interesting thing, senses are not active in dream state or deep sleep, are they? For example, in 24 hours, if you analyze, you can see 8 or 9 hours only you have an opportunity for sense gratification. The remaining time, either you are sleeping or you are busy with something, whichever it is, I mean, the time that you have is not very much for sense gratification. That is only during the waking state. During the dream state, the mind is active, the mind is busy. And in the deep sleep, even the mind becomes inactive, along with the senses. Senses and the mind are completely under, completely closed down. There's no more activity at that time. So, why does this happen that in the wakened state, we are thinking about sense gratification only? Why does it happen like that? Because of the senses and the mind, and the sense objects. There are three things. The sense objects, then the senses, and the mind. These are the three things in a line, you can see. Out of these three, the mind is the most critical of all these three, because it's who is enjoying. We say sense enjoyment, but actually the mind is enjoying. Isn't it? When you are tasting some nice food, who is enjoying? The mind is enjoying. Similarly, every sensual activity, the enjoyer is the mind. So he is the person who we have to catch first. As long as he is looking for enjoyment, no matter what you do with the senses or sense objects, it's not going to help. For example, the senses are considered to be like the windows in the body. So the mind is able to contact the sense objects. Through these windows, they come out and touch the sense objects and feels the pleasure from the sense objects. Now, say for example, you have decided to control all your senses. Closed your eyes, closed your ears, held the nose tightly, and closed the mouth, and no opportunity to talk to anybody, and this, that, and the other. You, in every possible way, you have controlled your senses. But do you think you can escape sense gratification? No. Why? Because the mind is saying to the sense objects, look, these windows have been closed, I can't come to them to you now. So they are saying to the mind, okay, if you can't come to us, we will come to you. You see, if you can't come to us, we will come to you. And sitting with all these senses control, still the mind is absorbed in the sense enjoyment, isn't it? Sometimes the mind is thinking about some sweet rice he has enjoyed 20 years ago, or something like that, what he has enjoyed in his early life. Some thoughts will come back, and that is what is dangerous. So these three things, mind, sense objects and senses, all these three things come under control when the mind is under control. That is why mind has been given a higher importance in the Bhagavad Gita as well as in the Srimad Bhagavatam, one who wants to advance in the spiritual path.
Shaknodi Hevaya Sodam Praksharidam Imokshanal Kamakromod Bhavam Vegam Sayukta Sasuhi Naraham.
That as long as one is in the bodily concept of life and attachment and hate, pride and envy, all these things, he will not be able to come out of it. But to get out of all these things, you require a material body as well. This is the interesting thing. You got all these problems because in your subtle body all this is there, isn't it? But if you want to get it out of your subtle body, you need a gross body. Because when you have the bodily concept of life, when you have the gross body, at the same time you have to come out of the gross body and then continuously strive to stop all the flow of all these different anarthas which is coming to the mind, and then he becomes playful. In other words, that continuously the flow of the different love, hate, anger, lust, anger, greed, all these things which is coming through, one has to be able to control them through the process of Krishna consciousness, and then everything becomes pure. And these are the things which actually covers our spiritual identity.
Yonda Sukhandari Rama Sarandar Jyotirevaya Sayogi Brahmanirvanam Brahmabhutaodhika Chadim.
That a yogi who have completely fixed up in his he is peaceful and he is fixed up in Krishna consciousness, he does not have to come back to this world again. And such a personality is the one who is liberated.
Labhande Brahmanirvanam Shayakshena Kalmasha Chinnadvaidayadalpanam Sarvabhutahide Rada.
That he is finished with all his sinful activities, and because he is only holding the material body to execute to the service of the other living entities, just like the sages have done, and all his purificatory processes have purified him to that stage, and eventually he becomes qualified to go back home, to go back to the spiritual world. And whatever he is doing here, everything he has done by his different bodily functions, that's all for the benefit for the rest of the world. He is not looking for, in other words, all his activities are only to please Krishna, nothing else for him. And it is only then he is able to be released from here.
Kamakroha muktanam yadinam yadachetasam abhido brahmanurvanam vartade evidida alpanam.
So everything, when all the all these anarthas or all the lust, anger, greed, envy, all these kind of things, when they are taken away from the consciousness, then he is fully freed from the material world. Then, in the Bhagavatam, all these things are shown to us through different stories to make us understand it better. Because when you say to somebody that you should get rid of all these things from your mind, the person will find it very, very difficult because he doesn't know where it is, first of all, to get rid of it. And he does not know how to get rid of it, because as soon as he encounters a situation in this world which is not very pleasant, immediately his true nature will come out. He gets angry straight away. So like that, it is not possible to control the mind. And therefore, through the process of Krishna consciousness by Srimad Bhagavatam, it is explained very well in the Bhagavatam. There was once this king called Chitrakedu. This Chitrakedu was a king who had a very difficult time. That he went back to the spiritual world by fluke, to say it, a fluke. Why? Because sometimes it happens like that also. He met a great personality, who? Sri Narada Maharshi. Narada Maharshi met him. So Chitrakedu told Sri Narada Muni, please give me some proper mantra upadesham, some mantram. So mantra so that I can chant and go back to spiritual world. Narada Maharshi took pity on him and gave a particular mantra to chant to our Chitrakedu, King Chitrakedu. Because he was a great king, he was a nice person, and say Narada Maharshi used to go visiting different kings and went to his palace. That is when this meeting happened. So Narada Maharshi told Chitrakedu, you chant this mantra for a few days sincerely and strictly according to my instruction and you will become perfect, he said to Chitrakedu. So Chitrakedu, what he did, he chanted this mantra sincerely about 7 days or 10 days, whatever it was told, and he got liberated and he went back to the spiritual world. But the problem with him was that he gone to the higher planets first. He didn't even get to the spiritual world strictly. He went to the higher planets. He was going through what is known as gradual liberation, Krama Mukti it is called. There's two types of liberation, Krama Mukti and Sadhya Mukti. Sadhya Mukti means immediate transfer from here to the spiritual world. Krama Mukti means going through stages, through higher planets and down to Brahmaloka and onwards and further from there to the spiritual world. So this Chitrakedu went to Siddhaloka, where Siddhas live. Siddhas means who have got a lot of siddhis, in other words, mystic powers. Very powerful people. They can travel anywhere they want. They can visit many, many higher planets and associate there. And they also have a lot of capacity. We are thinking, normally, human society is thinking we are perfect, but we are not perfect beings. Human society is one species, but there is Siddhas, Charanas, Gandharvas, Kinnaras, so many other different species also in the creation. So this personality, Chitrakedu, went to Siddhaloka and he was living there. So he stayed there for some time. So he got there first. So all the residents who were living in Siddhaloka, they noticed him. What did they find out? They found out that he has come here, but at the same time, he hasn't developed all the qualities necessary to live here in the Siddhaloka. He did not have the qualities. In other words, he still have, because it was done all quickly, you know, from here, Narada Muni sent him back in 7 days there. Go and live there, he said. You want the liberation, get out from here. He went from here. So, one day it so happened, all the other inhabitants of Siddhaloka was taking note of this, his nature like this. So one day they made a decision. They wanted to go and see Lord Shiva in Kailas. They made a plan to go and see Lord Shiva. So our Chitrakedu, who was there, he said to them that I am also coming with you to Kailas to see Lord Shiva. But all those who were there, they thought that this person is not ready yet to go to such places. Appears from his habits and appears from his consciousness, because they are elevated people, so they can see Chitrakedu's consciousness very well, what kind of mentality he had. Because he was still a little bit, that human qualities he has brought there with him. He was not so pure in his heart, in other words. He was acting in that way. So they told him, there's no need to come now. You are just new here. Stay here some time. And when you get, another time when we go, we will take you. Immediately, Chitrakedu got angry with them. He says to them, he says, why can't I come? I am also like you here. I got here because I've done something, isn't it? So I am also a Siddha like you. Why can't I come with you? He says. Like that to these other Siddhas who were present there. So, in the Bhagavatam, it's a beautiful story. If you read the whole, it takes a long time to tell the whole thing properly. But still, when he insisted that he should come, go with them, the other Siddhas said, all right, you can come with us. But they didn't like it, the way he insisted on everything, what he was wanted. Because the nature from the human species, where he was a king here, he was used to giving orders to everybody and telling everyone, this is how you do it. If you don't, your head is gone. That's how he was used to. He has gone to Siddhalokam, and that mentality hasn't gone completely from him. So they all went to Kailas. When they got to Kailas, Lord Shiva was sitting there fully naked. And Sri Parvati also sitting in his lap, fully naked. They were sitting like this. And when they got there, and so many great personalities, Vasishtha and great sages, they were all sitting in front of Lord Shiva and taking spiritual instructions from Lord Shiva. Because Lord Shiva is the spiritual master of the Brahma Vidya. The Jnanis, they follow Lord Shiva's tradition, isn't it? So Jnana Margam, they follow Brahma Vidya, is come from Lord Shiva. So all these sages who are such personalities, they were taking instructions from Lord Shiva and very carefully listening to what he was speaking. So this group of Siddhas arrives there. When they arrived there, all the Siddhas paid their obeisances there first, and they also sat very respectfully in one corner, like so many other great souls were sitting there. And these Siddhas knew, most of them, who they were. So they were very respectful and they sat there. For them, this scene was not disturbing them. The Sri Parvati sitting in Lord Shiva's lap in that way, nothing disturbed them. Nor Lord Shiva or Sri Parvati was disturbed. But what did our Chitraketu do when he got there? He sees this Lord Shiva sitting there naked with Sri Parvati like this. Immediately he bursts out. He says, "Who is this person sitting like this? Is this Lord Shiva?" he says. Completely naked, not even civilized how to act properly. All kinds of things came out from his mouth. And he spoke, and at that time Lord Shiva saw this, sitting this new entrance or new guest who has arrived to see him. He didn't say one word, but Sri Parvati got very upset with him for his misbehavior like this. And he told this Chitraketu, "Go and get into a demon's body. That's the place for you, not here. You're not qualified to be here." So he had to take the birth of a Vritrasura. Vritrasura comes in the 6th canto, I think. It comes there, the story of Vritrasura. So just because that you have somehow by, you get to the spiritual world, you can survive there, we shouldn't misunderstand that if we still have the old propensities in us, if we have not purified and cleared up all these things, if we go there, we'll be back here soon again. We won't be able to live there because we will do something like this when we get there. We'll find fault with Lord Shiva or Krishna or somebody there, and they will send us back. They'll say, "That's your place. Go back and get back to your business again." So, tamakrothamimuktanam yadinam yadachedasam abhido brahmanurvanam vartade evididalmanam. So that is how it is. And in the association of the great souls, one automatically purifies oneself, and eventually he can go back home, back to the spiritual world. So, kama krodha muttanam yadinam yadachedasam abhido brahmanurvanam vartade evididalmanam. So this is how that process. We have a few more verses to complete, and then we'll finish with chapter, which I'll do next Saturday. All glory to Srila Prabhupada.